From the studios of EWTN, this is Open Line with today's host, Father Wade Menezes. In North America, call toll-free 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985 or send an email to openline@ewtn.com.
Hey there, welcome again to Open Line Tuesday here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Jack Williams away today. I'm Tom Price, along with my favorite itinerant preacher, Father Wade Menezes. How are you, Padre?
I'm doing great, Tom. Good to have you with the team today as Jack is away. So we did the same last week, so this is great.
Yeah, he'll be back tomorrow. So fear not. As the Pope used to say, be not afraid. So you are road once again, right, Father?
I am. If you'll recall, last week I was in Riverbank, California, here in Stanislaus County, California, and near my home area where I grew up in the southwest part of Modesto, California. So I'm not too far from there again. That's Turlock, California this week at All Saints University Parish. So a shout out to Father Tom Orlando, the pastor here, and to his wonderful staff, Haley, Renee, and Marie, and to my natural blood brother who's stationed as a permanent deacon here, Deacon Lane Menezes.
Wow.
And also another permanent deacon here, Deacon Eric Hoagland. So a shout out to all of them and to the great work they do in their leadership here, all under Father Tom Orlando. Great parish. And last night we opened up the opening night of the parish mission with 320 people.
Wow.
So we are very, very thankful for that opening night number. Of course, we preach the mission regardless of how many show up, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that said, that was a beautiful number for the opening night, and we're very, very thankful for that. And so again, a shout out to the parish for doing such a fantastic job promoting the parish mission the weeks leading up to it. Really got the word out, and that really makes a difference.
Sounds like you're in very, very good company there. We're going to open up the phone lines right now at 833-288-EWTN. If you have a question for Father Wade, 833-288-3986. Outside North America, please dial 1 and then 205-271-2985 or send us an email, openline@ewtn.com. Be sure you put Tuesday or Father Wade in the subject line. And Father, you've got something very special for us today as we are deep into Lent.
Yeah, that's right. Second week in.
Yes.
A list of 40 different items, what to give up or what to do for Lent, right? What to give up would be the negative. What to do for, that would be the positive for this beautiful liturgical season of Lent. And this is adapted, these 40 items, Tom, from a wonderful article by Sherry Antonetti from the National Catholic Register from a couple years back. Okay. And she is a mother of 10 children, and she and her husband and family live in Washington, D.C. So a shout out to Sherry Antonetti. And to thank her for the nuts and bolts of this list. I tweaked it a little bit for the purposes of the radio springboard topic here, but I wanted to definitely give her credit for it. So with the Lenten season underway, you know, here's a few ideas for how to begin the spiritual journey into the desert and to prepare for the suffering, death, and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. You know, it's never too late to renew or rekindle your Lenten resolutions,
sure,
whether in the negative, that is to give up something, or in the positive, that is to do something. Never too late. Just rekindle anew your fervor from the beginning of Lent, Ash Wednesday a week and a half ago. So here's a few items that are from the list. Go to Mass an extra time during the week or two. Huh? How beautiful is that? Instead of just Sunday obligation Mass, try to go once or twice during the week. Give up caffeine. Volunteer in the soup kitchen or a hospital for a few hours a week that are located in your home area. How about surrendering credit card use during the weeks of Lent, huh? How about praying a rosary daily, faithfully? And if you already do that, maybe increase with another set of mysteries. So instead of praying five a day, pray 10 a day. How about share the daily Mass readings at dinner with your family members, at least the gospel, right? How about fasting from all fast food? Now, there's a difficult one, especially if you're a traveler like I am. Sometimes you can't help but have to grab something on the road. But fast from all fast food. How about taking on a novena to a saint or to one of the three divine persons or a daily devotional reader? Huh? How about adding an hour of Eucharistic adoration to your weekly prayer regimen? becoming a lay reader or an usher or bringing Holy Communion to the sick and homebound. Those are beautiful, beautiful things we can do during Lent, right? And and maybe stay on doing those things in ministry at our parish after Lent is over. So by the way, Tom, I'd love for our live callers this hour to call in and give a witness about what they're giving up in the negative or what they're doing in the positive for Lent. Maybe their item is not one of these 40 on this list. I would love to hear what our listeners are doing this hour for Lent. How about writing to friends and representatives about your faith or about a particular political issue in regards to what the church's moral teaching on it would be, and to let your representative, to let your friends know where the church stands on that? How about to go to the gym or to exercise daily as, get this, as an offering to God, part of that balance of prayer, work, and recreation or leisure that St. Thomas Aquinas teaches about so beautifully. For some of us, the gym might be work, but for others of us, it might be recreation and leisure. So either or, you know, we want to keep that balance of prayer, work, and recreation. I talked about that last night during the opening night of the parish mission. The title of the talk last night for the opening night was Be Faithful to Your Daily Duty. And I told my listeners there, all 320 gathered there in the beautiful Church of All Saints University Parish here near Stanislaus State University, about the importance of St. Thomas Aquinas' teaching of living a daily balance, the adjective daily he puts there, a daily balance of prayer, work, and recreation or leisure. How about abstaining from a favorite social media platform like Facebook or X, or from one's phone altogether if you can, or at least for certain hours during the day? How about refraining from unpleasant, catty, or snarky comments even in your head? We'll talk about that tonight. Our second talk tonight at the parish mission is titled Be Other-Centered as opposed to being self-centered. How about saying I love you daily to a family member or to all of your family members? How beautiful is that? Offer up the most hated short you have, performing it with a cheerful heart and with extra gumption and go, and do it well with the virtue of diligence. How about receiving the sacrament of reconciliation more often during Lent and adopting a daily examination of conscience that you can do at the end of the day or at midday to see how your day is going? How about becoming more educated on the Catechism of the Catholic Church or on Catholic history? Maybe taking on five-numbered paragraphs of the Universal Catechism of the Catholic Church. There's a beautiful work you could do that would also be a type of study of the Church's teachings, huh? How about matching all extra spending in charitable giving? Whatever you spend extra on things that maybe you really don't need, to match that amount with charitable giving. How about eliminating television and or entertainment screens? How about that? Ban the cell phone or computer while not at work. How about visiting the sick, the elderly, or the imprisoned as some of the spiritual works of mercy? How about praying daily for the holy souls in purgatory? Maybe an extra divine mercy chaplet for the holy souls in purgatory. How about seeking reconciliation with an estranged family member or a friend that you maybe had a falling out with, reaching out, making amends? How about give up a time waster that's unnecessary, like unnecessarily surfing the internet or unnecessary shopping, frivolous shopping, wasted time on television or even on the smartphone? Wasted time, huh? How about having meatless meals all 40 days of Lent, not just abstaining from meat on Fridays of Lent, but how about all 40 days of Lent? That would be a real commitment there. How about inviting others to go to Mass with you, not only on Sunday itself, but also those one or two extra times you might take on Mass during the week? Here at All Saints University Parish, we're having beautiful amounts of individuals attending the morning Mass at 8 o'clock, you know, close to 50 people. Clear out your closets of excessive toys and clothes that can be donated to charity. How about that? And at the same time, feel good that you're doing some early spring cleaning. How about comforting the mourning with food, with your presence, and with prayer, helping them out, those who are mourning? Maybe they recently lost a loved one. How about contributing to Catholic charities or to a religious order to aid them in their apostolate works of aiding the poor and the unfortunate and the disenfranchised? How about having masses said for loved ones, both living and deceased? This is a beautiful, beautiful suffrage. Is to, you know, the Mass is the highest form of prayers. It's the source and summit of the entire Christian life. How about having masses said for your deceased parent or deceased parents? Maybe a triduum of masses, you know, a three masses said, what we would call a triduum of masses. Or for somebody who's living, maybe your godparent is living, having masses said for them. How about witnessing to the sanctity of human life by writing letters to representatives about the evil of abortion? Huh? That's something I think that's really worth doing. And also giving witness in front of abortion clinics peacefully, according to the law, and also in regards to the death penalty. How about hosting a family for a simple dinner on a Friday and discuss your faith at table? Discuss your faith at table with your family members, huh? How about resolving to sing loudly, if not well, at Mass with joy and reverence?
Yes.
And helping with the catechism program at your local church, maybe CCD night on Wednesdays, huh? Become Absolutely. A witness for your faith. And we'll finish up these last few when we come back, Tom.
Oh, Father, you're so close. So close.
So close.
But we will finish that right on the other side of the break. We'll also get to Michael in Spokane. Lines are open for you as well at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade Menezes.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. If you have a question, call 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985. Or send us an email to openline@ewtn.com.
Lines are open for you here on Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade Menezes, 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. Father Wade is going to finish up that list of things to, think about for Lent resolutions, what to give up, what to take up for Lent. Father, just a few left.
Yeah, that's right. We finished just before the break with saying maybe helping out your local parish's catechism program as a volunteer CCD teacher or whatnot, becoming a witness for your faith at the same time. The next one on the list of 40 is to get more involved in your parish and diocese, find out where help is needed, and become that help, even if it's just volunteerism a couple hours a week, if not constantly on a continuum, that is, maybe just for a certain project that your parish or diocese is having, until that project is completed. How about giving up any unhealthy habit that keeps you from becoming closer to Christ, huh? Anything that keeps you from your relationship in growing closer to Jesus Christ. How about spending time discovering a saint's faith through their writings, or reading a daily life of a saint?
Yes.
Is a beautiful thing to do, even if it's a short, condensed version of a life of a saint. One of my favorites, I believe it's put out by Ignatius Press. It may well be available from EWTN Religious Catalog. It's titled Voices of the Saints by Bert Gezi.
Love that book.
Yes. And what I love about it is, number one, it's a 365-day reader, so you're meant to take a saint a day. Mm-hmm. And each saint's life is just a page to a page and a half long. It's a real good synthesis of that saint's life. That's why it's able to be read daily, just a page to a page and a half on a day on each saint. And what I love about it, Tom, is that Voices of the Saints really shows forth, through Bert's research of the saint, the faux pas of that saint, their particular issues, dependencies, or maybe a full-blown addiction that they suffered from, but they eventually overcame it and became great, great saints. I like to say the saints got the memo, huh?
Yes.
They got the memo of holiness, and they started working on personal sanctity. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
So again, spend time discovering a saint's faith or life through their writings. And then ask God for the graces you lack daily. What a simple, beautiful prayer. Maybe in your morning offering, God, I ask you to assist me today with those graces that I lack in my daily life. Assist me by giving me those graces I lack, either through my own stubbornness, or because I don't ask you for them. When you want me to cooperate with you in exercising my will to ask for your many gifts, please give me the graces that I lack. Now, how about this? The last one, spending time every day thanking God for the great gift of his only begotten Son. How beautiful is that?
Yes.
All right. That is it. Our four, list of 40 things from Sherry Antonetti, adapted a little bit for the purposes of Open Line Tuesday. I want to thank her for a great article. It appeared in the National Catholic Register a few years ago. She's a mother of 10 children. God bless her and her husband, and they live just outside Washington, D.C., and we thank her for her freelance Catholic writing.
And one thing that you can pick up, don't give it up, but pick up more Catholic radio during Lent. And EWTN is all over social media, so you can find all your favorite programs available right now. Check us out on X. Here's the address, at EWTN Radio on X, at EWTN Radio. And remember, EWTN is everywhere. And if you're ready now, let's get to the phones at 833-288-EWTN, beginning with Michael in Spokane, Washington, listening on the great Sacred Heart Radio. Hello there, Michael. What's on your mind today?
Well, thank you both for taking my call. Happy early St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you.
I like to look at the homeless and see them as human beings, or I try to not look the other way, to see them as God's image and likeness, to listen to them or talk to them if possible and help them in any way. And here in Spokane, I'm involved in the pro-life movement.
Beautiful.
You know, since 1973, there have been 65 million abortions in America, 65 million unborn lives lost.
Tragic. And absolutely tragic.
It is. It's beyond that, Father. And then we have the abortion mail order pill now. We're trying to stop that, restrictions on that, chemical abortions. Pro-life should always be very peaceful, very positive, always that. And I'm also against the death penalty as well.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, thank you so much for your pro-life witness, especially not only during Lent, but even outside of Lent, it sounds like. So we thank you for that. You had a particular question today with our call screener. What was that question, Michael?
Yeah, a couple of questions. One, it says, let not your hearts be troubled. Let not your hearts be troubled. In my Father's house there are many rooms. Maybe that's Motel 6. That's John 14. And also, could you comment on purgatory as well, how it originated?
Yeah, so the different levels... Sure. Thank you so much, Michael. So the different levels of heaven, in my Father's house there are many mansions, will be based on the degree of charity that one practiced in this life while still living. There's a beautiful story told by St. Therese in her Story of a Soul that's also reiterated by one of her sisters who also entered the Carmelite monastery about Therese being very young and not understanding how everybody can be happy in heaven, even though there's different levels of happiness in heaven. She couldn't understand how everybody's at their optimum. So her sister grabbed some glasses out of the kitchen cupboard of different sizes, and she filled each glass up to the absolute brim, or the absolute rim, at the very, very top with water, right to the very top of each glass, even though each glass was a different size. And the sister turned to little Therese, and she said to her, "The glass represents the different mansions in heaven, and the water in the glass represents your happiness. So you will be at your optimum happiness in heaven, even though there are different mansions based on the degree of charity practiced while the person was still living on earth," right? So this is why faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love, is so, so important. It doesn't mean that you walk around all day with your hands folded looking up to heaven like the saints' laminated holy cards always seem to depict saints. That's not what holiness means. Holiness means pursuing virtue and virtuous living, even to an heroic degree, with all five of your bodily senses, sight, smell, taste, touch, and hearing, and all primary four faculties of the soul, intellect, will, memory, and imagination, and taking these nine great gifts of the body-soul composite and gearing them towards virtue and virtuous living, asking God for his graces to help you sustain that and to be for others the light of Christ. That's holiness. It's not about walking around with your hands folded prayerfully and looking up to heaven all day. That's not holiness. Holiness is becoming holy right where you are, as I'm saying during the parish mission this week, single, married, widowed, consecrated religious, active or contemplative, diocesan priest, religious order priest, a high school student, middle school student, even the elementary school student who's attained the age of reason, even the university student who's working on holiness, for example, because he knows his baptism and confirmation calls him to practice chaste courtship while at college. So when he takes these young ladies out, because he's open to courtship because he's discerning marriage or not, right? When he takes these young ladies out, he knows he's called to be their Saint Joseph, okay? He wants to protect their dignity. He wants to protect their virtue. And he treats them as such during these nights of courtship, right? And when he takes them out on the weekend or whatever. So that's holiness, becoming holy right where you are, regardless of your vocation and state in life. And you know, purgatory has always been taught by the church, and it wasn't challenged till the 13th century. That's when the Council of Lyon in France in 1274 finally definitively had to define it because it was being challenged, okay? But up until that point of the Council of Lyon, it was never challenged. So that's number one about purgatory. And why has the church always taught it? Well, because Scripture says that purification, an absolute pure purification, if you will, is needed before one can enter heaven. There can be no evil, no attachment to sin at all for one to enter heaven. So we have the purification necessary for heaven, talked about in Hebrews 12:14 and Revelations 21:27, for example. The fact that there's an intermediate state of purification is intimated by Jesus himself in Matthew 5:26 and Luke 12, verses 58 and 59. The fact that there's different degrees of expiation of sin is also talked about by Jesus in Luke 12, verses 47 and 48. The fact that the dead can be aided by prayer is found in 2 Maccabees 12:45. And the fact that after expiration, okay, or expiation, I should say, one can enter heaven, that's found in 1 Corinthians 3:15 by the walking through fire, right? So these are some of there's others, but these are some of the key scriptural passages as to why the church has always taught the reality of purgatory. So for example, I'll just take one of those. 2 Maccabees says it is a holy and pious thought to pray for the dead. Well, wait a minute. If the dead are in hell, our prayers don't assist them one iota.
Yeah.
But if the deceased soul is in heaven, our prayers don't assist them either because they've already attained the beatific vision,
mm-hmm.
right? So the damned souls in hells cannot benefit from our prayers, and the souls in heaven don't need our prayers, okay? So that's important to realize. And so that's what the church is teaching here. So there must be an intermediate state as to where prayers for the faithful departed, prayers for the deceased can be aided by those prayers, as 2 Maccabees tells us again in 1245, it is a holy and pious thought to pray for the dead. And this went unchallenged in the church until the church was forced to finally definitively define purgatory at the Council of Lyon in 1274. And thank you so much, Michael, for a great question. God bless you now.
Appreciate it, Michael. Thanks so much for your call. It is Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade Menezes here on EWTN. Still time for a few more phone calls at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. Let's go to Abraham now in Muskogee, Oklahoma, listening to us there on the EWTN app. Abraham, we may have to carry you over the break here. What's on your mind today?
Well, it's a little bit complicated. I recently heard a story about a pastor or a cult leader that led his congregation to a suicide, and they died. And I obviously know if the pastor doesn't change his ways, there's going to be he's got to pay. My question is, the parishioners have followed him, believing that they were that he was leading them to Jesus. How do you think that they might be treated? And two, the pastor that led them down the wrong way, I see that same scenario with Protestant pastors leading their congregation away from Catholicism, and I was wanting to see the difference.
All right.
So sin is always, always, always a personal act. And we will come back and finish this question when we come back from our bottom of the hour break.
Abraham, hang in there with us. We will continue in just a couple of seconds. Still two lines open available for your call, 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. It is Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade Menezes here on EWTN. Do stay with us.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
It is Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade Menezes here on EWTN. Before the break, we were taking a call from Abraham in Muskogee, Oklahoma, who had a couple of questions there, right, Father?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, sin is always, always a personal act that the person chooses to partake of, either venially or mortally, depending if all three elements are present for a mortal sin. Now, a sin can be carried out with another, okay? Tom, you and I rob a bank together. I want to make it clear, everybody, we did not do this in real life, but I'm going to use it as an example. I don't think Adrienne would like to know if Father Wade and Tom robbed a bank together, okay? But anyway, if Tom and I rob a bank together, it is still a personal sin on Father Wade's part, and it is still a personal sin on Tom's part. So the same thing applies with these massacres of multiple people, like the Jonestown massacre, right, of several decades ago. The question is, how much culpability, that's a fancy word for guilt, how much culpability did these individuals who died, who drank the cyanide, how much culpability did they have in knowing that they were doing was wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Or were they really swooned by this leader and totally duped by the leader? So God does not hold against us what is not truly our own fault, okay? And this is the scary thing about cults, okay? And that's a whole nother issue, but this is the scary thing about cults. So the Catechism teaches that sin is an offense against reason, truth, and right conscience. In other words, in doing what is right, true, good, and beautiful. Sin is an offense against reason, truth, and right conscience. It is failure in genuine love for God and neighbor caused by a perverse attachment to certain goods. It wounds the nature of man and injures human solidarity. It has been defined by St. Augustine as an utterance, a deed, or a desire contrary to the eternal law of God. For mortal sin to be present, we need to have something that's grave matter. It seriously contravenes God's moral law. Number two, you have to have knowledge, foreknowledge that it's grave matter. That is to say that it seriously contravenes God's moral law, the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue. And number three, you do it with deliberate consent of your will anyway. Mm. Grave matter, fullness of knowledge that it's grave matter, and done with deliberate consent of your will anyway, okay? If all three are present, the individual has a mortal sin. If any one or two of those three things is missing, you have a venial sin, okay? So who knows where these individuals were on the fullness of knowledge, on the deliberate consent, and the fullness of not the action was grievous following a cult leader like that. There's no doubt about that. But did they have foreknowledge that was grievous to do? And did they follow him with full consent of their will, or were they duped into it? We just don't know. So on situations like this, we rely on the mercy of God.
Mm.
God's mercy is his greatest attribute, the church fathers teach us.
Yes.
So following this question, I just want to sum it up by this. I really want to encourage our listeners right now live to read that section on sin where that definition of sin that I just read is found in the Universal Catechism of the Catholic Church. That's number 1849, but there's a few more paragraphs in that same section about sin. Number 1849, a few before and a few paragraphs after. Read that section on sin. Know about sin. Know about the difference between mortal sin and venial sin. I told the people, and I say this frequently, know your faith, defend your faith, share your faith, and love your faith. Great question. Thank you so much.
Appreciate your call there, Abraham from Muskogee. It is Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade here on EWTN. Hey, congratulations to another EWTN radio partner. That would be the great Billings Catholic Radio, with three stations serving Billings and Laurel, Montana. They are celebrating 15 years with us this week.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it is. Congratulations to Deacon Roy Brown and his great team there at Billings Catholic Radio from your friends here at EWTN. All right, back to the phones now for Bob in Chicago, listening on Sirius XM, Channel 130. Hello, Bob. What's on your mind today?
Hey, how are you? I'm Catholic. I'm a teacher in Chicago. I teach in public schools, and I like the public schools. I've been a public school proponent, but these days, you know, around the country, the world, the one gripe I have is how can Catholics help to stop the chemical abortion pill, the birth control pill, and the surgical procedure of abortion? I don't hear this in the church too much, but I believe now we call ourselves one nation under God, Christian nation, but we violate the most helpless, innocent baby. Goes back to 73, the Supreme Court just when they're ruling, you know, the baby, the unborn baby is not a human. So we've had, 70 million abortions, but we call ourselves a good nation, but we're in a war, I guess, with Iran, Iraq, but I don't know if they have abortions, but they're the bad guys, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess we're the good guys. But
yeah. And with the increase of technology, it's not just a mere question of the clinical abortion where the woman purposefully drives to the clinic and has the abortion. We also have, like you just said, the telemed abortion, the RU486 bill, etc. Okay, so the church's universal teaching on abortion is found in the second chapter, part 3 of the Universal Catechism, under "You shall love your neighbor as yourself," where abortion is clearly defined as a sin, because the church teaches that once an egg has been fertilized, it is not a potential human being, but rather it is a human being. Yes. With potential.
Yes.
If it's given the chance to gestate on the uterine wall, okay? Once an egg has been fertilized, the possible full gestation must be granted to that human being, because it is a human being with potential and not a potential human being, and it cannot be treated as either a means or an end. Human persons are not meant to be treated as either a means or an end, okay? And that's very important. So the Catechism teaches that direct abortion, that is abortion that is either willed as an end or a means, is a criminal practice gravely contrary to the moral law. And it's right there in the Universal Catechism, and it has constantly been taught this by the church, okay? We are to protect the life of every human being as far as we are able to. We have a moral duty and responsibility to protect the human person and the human person's dignity from their earliest stages of formation. And we can never ever deny that truth, you know? And so that's what we need to get out. That's the message we need to get out, you know. How about contraception, abortifacient contraception, which, and I'm not talking necessarily about the RU486 bill, although that is a form of abortifacient contraception, but there's other methods as well. The standard birth control pill can be an abortifacient contraceptive. In other words, it frustrates the fertilization process, so the fertilized egg cannot latch onto the uterine wall.
Yeah.
And so you have a chemically induced spontaneous abortion in the dorm building sewage system. If it's two young people on campus that are fornicating and she's on abortifacient contraception, you know, this is a moral evil. This is a moral evil. And we have a duty to stand up for the truth. For the truth. And you know, Mother Teresa spoke at the 1994 National Prayer Breakfast. And it was very, very powerful. She was invited by then President Bill Clinton and First Lady Hillary and Vice President Al Gore and Second Lady Tipper Gore. And they're flanking her at the podium. The two couples, the first couple and the second couple, that they're flanking her at the podium at the 1994 prayer breakfast. You can find this on YouTube. And she says, if we say, Mother Teresa says this, now Saint Mother Teresa, she says, if we say that a mother has the right to kill her own child in her womb, then how can we ever expect other people not to kill one another? I mean, that's a powerful statement. And look what's going on right now in the Middle East, the killing taking place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have a duty to stand up for the truth. Bob, thank you so much for being the teacher you're called to be, a moralist, an upright, good, solid Catholic teacher with your students. And thank you for your call today. We really appreciate it. It's a great witness question.
Thanks again, Bob, for your call from Chicago. And Father, I am very proud of being associated in my little way with this network, which has never shied away from issues of life. We promote it. We talk about it on virtually all of our programs, yeah. and have as long as I can remember.
Yeah, that's right.
A real blessing.
Amen.
It is Open Line of Tuesday with Father Wade Menezes here on EWTN. Let's go to Beth now, a first-time caller from Tennessee, listening on Sirius XM Channel 130. Hey there, Beth. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon. I'm fairly new, so I have a cardinal question.
Okay.
And Cardinal Dolan brought this to my thinking, and the conclave also. He was required to retire at 75, but at the conclave, there are cardinals that are, heard a lot of talk about aging out of that vote. So what is the...
Yeah, they're required...
The cardinal in between.
Yeah, so great question. So bishops and cardinals need to submit their letters of resignation at age 75. But then once they retire from their office of administration of the particular diocese or archdiocese they were at, mm-hmm. Depending on their health, they can still serve on committees for the Vatican, for example. They're just not administrating anymore.
Right.
They can also be a voting member in a papal conclave. I'd have to research this, but I think they can be a voting member in a papal conclave up to age 80, I think.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, but they need to submit their letter of resignation at 75. And the Holy Father can, if he wishes, not accept their letter of resignation. Let's say they're in really solid good health at 75, and they're leading very, very well in their archdiocese. The Pope could have him stay on a few more years, but it is canon law that they have to at least submit the letter of resignation. But then once they're out of office, they write books, they can serve on a committee, they might choose to retire in a residence that's in the geographical location of the very archdiocese that they had governance over. Mm-hmm. They might want to retire to Rome. They might want to retire back to the family farm in Kansas. I've heard all kinds of stories of not just cardinals, but bishops and archbishops who have taken the road of retirement in different avenues. And it just depends on their health. It just depends on how much they still want to do in their retirement stage. But many of them will serve on committees. Many of them still continue to write books. And so they can still stay very, very active in the church. But the administration stops once they are out of office, which you are correct. Cardinal Dolan of the Archdiocese of New York recently retired. He submitted his letter earlier, but he was finally replaced by now Cardinal Hicks, and so now he's officially in retirement, but I can see Cardinal Dolan still doing good works for the church, probably maybe writing a book, aiding Rome with some different committees or whatever. So who knows? But that's a great question. But the main question that you're asking is regarding administration, and they are asked to submit their resignation letter at age 75.
Appreciate your call there, Beth. And Cardinal Dolan actually has already committed to serving within the archdiocese. I don't remember exactly what it is,
okay.
But they're putting him to work. They say no.
Well, there you go.
There's
great.
No relaxing for you.
Yeah, there you have it. So he's going to stay on in that area, that geographical area of the archdiocese,
indeed.
So forth. So.
Well, there you
go. I think he was originally from St. Louis,
if
I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So there you have it. He's going to do some work for Cardinal Hicks on some committee probably there in the Archdiocese of New York.
I'll tell you a quick funny story, Father Wade. I was filling in one day on Catholic Answers Live, and this was when Cardinal Dolan was still in Milwaukee. And, you know, he led the diocese there for some years before going to New York. And during the break, you know, he and I were just chatting because we were both from St. Louis. We got on the subject of great beers of St. Louis, not just, you know, Anheuser-Busch, but some of the more obscure brands like Falstaff and stuff. He was very sharp and very up on all that. It was hilarious.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade here on EWTN. Coming up next on most of these EWTN stations, it'll be Beacon of Truth with Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers. On today's program, their guest, Roxy Beckles. Roxy will be talking about faith and mental fitness. Also, today's soulful psalm, that'll be Psalm 50, verses 8 through 9, and then again, 16 through 21. A great program coming up next on most of these EWTN stations. Let's go now to Marie in Texas, listening on the Great Guadalupe Radio. Hey, Marie, what's on your mind today?
Yeah. Hi, Father. Thank you for taking my call. I am a sponsor for my husband and I are sponsors for our brother-in-law and sister-in-law who are entering the church. And we were...
Oh, beautiful.
There this weekend. Yeah, it's been wonderful. And he kind of stumped me on a question, and I don't know if I gave the right answer. We were talking about the Eucharist and about the Last Supper, Jesus instituting his Holy Eucharist with both species, and commanding that do this in memory of me about the body and the blood. And my brother-in-law was like, well, I want to do both. And he says, how come if you don't have to do both? Why did that change when Jesus said you're supposed to have both? So I don't know what the history of this.
Great question. So
my best guess, but I changed and why.
Great question. So Catholicism teaches that the total Christ, the full Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity, is sacramentally present and equally present under each species. The consecrated host, the Eucharist itself, and the precious blood, the consecrated wine, okay? That from the words of consecration onwards, this is my body, this is the chalice of my blood, no longer ordinary bread and wine, but truly, really, and substantially present, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ through the beautiful miracle of transubstantiation, even though the accidents, characteristics, stay the same of bread and wine. This is why it's not cannibalism. It's not cannibalism for three reasons. Number one, he's not a human person. He's a divine person, specifically the second person of the Most Holy Trinity who became incarnate, who took on a fully human nature, just like ours in every way but sin, but he remained a human person. Excuse me, he remained a divine person. He is not a human person. He's a divine person with a fully human nature, just like ours in every way but sin. So that's the first reason why it's not cannibalism. He's a divine person, not a human person. Number two, he's alive, not dead through his resurrection. He's alive, he's not dead. These are the three reasons why it's not cannibalism. The Eucharist is not cannibalism. And number three, it's not cannibalism because we Catholics readily admit that after the words of consecration, this is my body, this is my blood, that the accidents, that's a philosophical term, the accidents, characteristics, or appearances, and each one of those three terms is synonymous with the other two, we Catholics readily admit that after the words of consecration, this is my body, this is the chalice of my blood, that the accidents, characteristics, and appearances of bread and wine remain. We admit that. So that's the third reason why it's not cannibalism, okay? So he's a divine person, not a human person. He's alive, not dead, and we readily admit as Catholics that the accidents, characteristics, or appearances of bread and wine remain after the words of consecration, even though the species are no longer bread and wine, and this takes faith, right? This takes faith to believe that through the miracle of transubstantiation, after the words of consecration, it really is truly the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. You know, St. Paul says in Romans 10:17, faith comes through hearing, and that's very interesting, and I'll tell you why it's very interesting, because we hear the words of consecration at Mass. We hear the words, this is my body, this is the chalice of my blood, and faith comes through hearing, St. Paul says in Romans 10:17, so you hear the words of consecration. And then yet after consecration, the other four bodily senses, sight, smell, taste, and touch, still tell us that the appearances of bread and wine remain. The appearances, characteristics, or accidents remain. This is why I love the end of the line of the first stanza of the Tantum Ergo. It says this, what the senses fail to fathom, meaning the four senses of sight, smell, taste, and touch, because they tell us after consecration that it still looks like bread and wine, tastes like bread and wine, touches like bread and wine, and smells like bread and wine, sight, smell, taste, touch. But hearing tells us otherwise, because we hear the words of consecration. And the Tantum Ergo says, what the senses fail to fathom, let us grasp through faith's consent. That's a powerful line in the Tantum Ergo, my friends. What the senses, meaning the first four, sight, smell, taste, and touch, what the senses fail to fathom, fail to comprehend, fail to see, smell, taste, and touch, let us grasp through faith's consent. And faith comes through hearing. And so the reason why we don't have to receive both species is because the full and total Christ is sacramentally and equally present in both species, precious body and precious blood. Even though the church does teach that the precious blood can be given on Sundays, and it can be given, of course, on high solemnities and feasts. For what reason? For the fuller sign of the whole Christ. Even though each species contains the full Christ, we humans are big on the senses, right? So to see the precious blood in the chalice on a special solemnity like Christmas or the Immaculate Conception, or on a Sunday when a parish offers the precious blood on a Sunday, but it does not do it during its weekday masses, it tells us, hey, something special about this mass, because we're receiving the full Christ under both species in the more complete and fuller form, where we can see it and taste it in the precious blood, as opposed to just receiving the host. So both species contain the full Christ, the complete Christ, and the full Christ and total Christ is equally present in both, but receiving only one and not both, you're still receiving the full Christ. That's the reason why. And the church's GIRM, the General Instruction of the Roman Missal, G-I-R-M, which is the Pre Notanda of the Roman Missal, makes it clear that priests are most welcome to distribute both species at the higher, during the times of higher feast days and higher solemnities. Great question. Thank you so much. And God bless you and your husband for sponsoring your brother and sister-in-law in having them come into the Catholic Church at the Easter Vigil. What a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Open Line Tuesday with Father Wade here on EWTN. This question, Father, came in from Roman. Why is the Kyrie eleison the only part of the Catholic liturgy that was carried over from Greek, while most everything else is from Latin?
Yeah, honoring the sacred text and the sacred language of the early scriptures is the reason why that holdover has remained so beautifully strong and has retained its being esteemed in the Roman liturgy of the Latin rite. You could get more Greek in any of the other Eastern rites. I don't know which one specifically, but there are definitely 23 Eastern rites, and some of those would have even more Greek, more in the vernacular of their own native tongue, whatever that might be, but also would have more Greek. But in the Latin rite, we have that part, the Kyrie, the ringing out of Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy, Lord have mercy, and it's in respect to the ancient texts.
Beautiful.
Great question.
Sure is. Thanks for sending that in to us, Roman. Here's one now from Donna. How do you prepare to have a big, great family? And what can a person do to raise a holy family?
Well, that's a loaded question, you know, but the church wants responsible parenthood. The church wants responsible spacing, very, very clear in Humanae Vitae in regards to the beauty of larger families and what they can contribute. But some couples don't always have that blessing for various reasons, say fertility or whatever. But it's a noble task to aspire to, provided one is able to do it. And there's none of the areas of inhibitance that Humanae Vitae talks about, such as, for example, psychological stress or a medical issue. The church wants responsible pregnancies, responsible spacing, and responsible growing of the families. And if anything must be done that temporarily halts that conception. It must be done naturally. It must be naturally done by respecting the fertile periods of the wife by abstinence during those fertile periods. That's what Humanae Vitae asks for.
Okay.
But it simultaneously esteems the beauty of large families.
Okay.
And so these different areas that Humanae Vitae mentions, like health, and that's just one area, finances is another, you got to take into account. But as far as growing in holiness as a family, partake of the sacraments, do good works in your society where you live, pray together as a family. Remember Father Patrick Peyton, the family that prays together stays together. Yes. How beautiful is that? So there's all kinds of things that can be done. Look to the patron saint of the Holy Family at Nazareth. This week at our All Saints University Parish Mission this week that's going on live these four nights, Monday through Thursday, our Parish Mission prayer card has the Holy Family of Nazareth depicted on the front in Joseph's workshop. Why? Because of their faithfulness to their daily duty. The opening talks material last night. Be faithful to your daily duty. So diligence, the virtue of diligence, the father and husband seeing himself as the true priest figure of the home, the Christ figure of the home, the mother seeing her role as wife and mother as the heart of the home, the church figure of the home, the bride of Christ figure of the home, and the shared love of spouses toward their children and towards one another, and also of the children towards their parents. There's a beautiful, beautiful section on the sanctity of marriage and family life in the Universal Catechism of the Catholic Church, and also John Paul II, now saint, his landmark apostolic exhortation, Familiaris Consortio, the role of the Christian family in the modern world. It's yes, worth indeed. A read.
Absolutely. Father, could you leave us with your blessing, please?
I certainly will, Tom. May the blessing of Almighty God, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit descend upon all of our Open Line Tuesday listeners and remain with each and every one of you this day and always. St. Joseph, terror of demons.
Pray for us. Father Wade, we hope you have a great turnout tonight and for the rest of your retreat there. I think it's going to be a fantastic one. On behalf of our wonderful team here, which is also quite fantastic, I'm Tom Price filling in for Jack Williams, and along with Father Wade, everybody else here. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time here on EWTN's Open Line. God bless.